있습니까?
This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. Some Republican lawmakers in the United States are pushing back against television host Tucker Carlson's depiction of the deadly Capitol building riot. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Meghani reports.
Using some 41,000 hours of security footage handed him by the House's top Republican, Carlson's Fox News show did air scenes of hand-to-hand combat, but he sought to depict some of the Capitol invaders not as insurrectionists, but sightseers, a narrative favorable to Donald Trump. But from Senate GOP Chief Mitch McConnell,
it was a mistake in my view,
to top Deputy John Thune,
it was an attack on the Capitol,
and North Carolina's Tom Tillis, who says Carlson's version is BS.
I was here.
Sagar Meghani, Washington.
EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen hailed Ukrainian women during an address to the Canadian Parliament Tuesday and said Russia's aggression is also a war on human and women's rights. She said the number of women serving in the Ukrainian military has doubled since Russia's invasion. Earlier, during a joint appearance with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, von der Leyen addressed the world's dependency on Russian energy at the beginning of the war in Ukraine.
There was a big over-dependency at the beginning of the Russian invasion in Ukraine of Europe's energy needs, an over-dependency on Russian fossil fuels.
Von der Leyen is visiting Canada on Tuesday before flying to the United States to try to lobby for a deal that allows European companies to benefit from Inflation Reduction Act tax advantages for batteries and battery components. Like Canada, the European Union is also aiming to bolster its own investments in the green transition. From Washington, this is VOA News. Greece faces a fresh round of mass strikes and nationwide protests on Wednesday as anger mounts over the country's worst rail tragedy that killed 57 people last week. 14 people remain in hospital after a freight train crashed head-on with a passenger train carrying mostly students near the central city of Larissa on February 28th. A station master who admitted forgetting to reroute one of the trains has been arrested and charged with negligent homicide and transport disruption. He faces life in jail if convicted. With his sights possibly on a higher officer, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis delivered his State of the State address, AP's Ed Donahue reports.
DeSantis is positioning himself as the architect of a new conservative vision.
Florida is number one, and working together, we will ensure that Florida remains the number one state in these United States.
The speech comes at the start of the legislative season in Florida. It's expected to serve as a platform for DeSantis's highly expected campaign for president.
We will stand strong. We will hold the line. We won't back down. And I can promise you this. You ain't seen nothing yet.
Democrats in Florida see the governor's agenda as intolerance and misdirected priorities, pointing out the new law that critics call Don't Say Gay that limits discussion of gender and sexuality in schools. I'm Ed Donahue.
Four Americans missing in Mexico have been found. AP correspondent Rita Foley has more.
Two of the Americans missing since they were kidnapped in Matamoros, Mexico last Friday are dead, says an official in Mexico. Two others are alive, though one is wounded. The FBI had been searching with Mexican authorities for the missing Americans. A relative of one of them said they had traveled together from South Carolina so one of them could get a tummy tuck. Shortly after driving into Mexico on Friday, they were caught in the crossfire of rival cartel groups. A video showed them being loaded into the back of a pickup truck by gunmen. I'm Rita Foley.
Israeli forces raided a refugee camp in the West Bank city of Jenin on Tuesday, killing at least six Palestinian gunmen, including a Hamas member suspected of shooting dead two brothers from a Jewish settlement near the village of Hawara. Early on Wednesday, a rocket launch was identified from the Gaza Strip toward Israel, triggering alarms and sending Israelis running to bomb shelters, though the rocket appeared to have landed inside Gaza and not inside Israeli territory, according to an Israeli military statement. And Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said Tuesday the U.S. economy is advancing at a faster pace than expected. That could prompt central bank policymakers to raise interest rates at a faster pace than originally planned. From Washington, I'm Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, March 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Russia and Ukraine exchange prisoners as the war sets off alarm in neighboring states.
These are just exercises, a rehearsal for what may be a real war, because it's clear to these fighters and to many Lithuanians that the world has changed in a year.
Pakistan is on high alert after a suicide bomber kills over 10 security officers.
Now, Islamic State's local chapter joining these militant groups in such attacks is a serious development for the Pakistani security forces in this province.
And at least 15 people are killed in a crowded market explosion in Bangladesh. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russia and Ukraine said on Tuesday they had exchanged scores of prisoners of war, the latest swap in more than a year of fighting. Russia's defense ministry said 90 Russian prisoners of war had returned from Ukraine in the latest exchange. Kyiv said 130 Ukrainian service personnel had been released from Russian custody. Andriy Yermak, head of the Ukrainian presidential staff, said 87 of the Ukrainians had taken part in the defense of the southeastern city of Mariupol before its capture by Russia. This as a Russian opposition activist who used social media to condemn Moscow's war in Ukraine received an 8.5-year jail sentence on Tuesday after a Moscow court found him guilty of spreading false information about the army. Dmitry Ivanov, who ran a protest channel on the Telegram social network for students of Moscow State University, said his statement about what Moscow calls, quote, its special military operation, unquote, in Ukraine were accurate and denied any wrongdoing. Russia's assault on Ukraine, now in its second year, has set off alarm in neighboring countries. Lithuania is redoubling efforts to prepare for a confrontation that many now see as more possible than ever. John Speer narrates this report by Ricardo Makina in the Lithuanian capital of Vilnius.
Lithuanian infantry advances. The objective is to quickly take an enemy position. These are just exercises, a rehearsal for what may be a real war, because it's clear to these fighters and to many Lithuanians that the world has changed in a year. Routine training now means much more for these men and women. As they see it, Lithuania's very existence depends on it. Raminta Banisuskaita is a first lieutenant with the Lithuanian army training at this facility outside Vilnius.
I feel that in my soldiers, I feel in myself that motivation is even bigger. And our mentality grows bigger because the neighbor is nearby. And what we do really big work into our individual skills. For example, surviving as individual. And of course, we are always aware and always prepared.
Lithuania is a member of the European Union and of NATO, which provides a political and military shield that Ukraine did not have when it was attacked a year ago. Yet, the war has shown that much remains to be learned. The NATO forces deployed in Lithuania consider it vital to observe the Ukrainian troops and integrate the tactics with which they have managed to face the Russian invasion. Our NATO hosts ask us to use first names. Captain Eric E. from the Netherlands says his forces are looking to Ukrainian fighters as an example.
When I look at our simple tactical level, is what you see, what you can do with not that many personnel, but with a lot of perseverance, but also combining it with modern drones, modern technologies to set up the preconditions for a good fight. I think that's one of the things that mainly stands out for how they put up a really brave fight now in the Ukraine.
Increased tensions in Europe brought on by the war in Ukraine have driven Russian chauvinism. In the Duma, Russia's parliament, a proposal has been introduced to reverse the 1991 decision to grant the independence to Lithuania. Moscow made a similar move in the run-up to its full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Russia's assault on Ukraine has not only forced the Lithuanian authorities and NATO to react, but society in general. The Lithuanian Riflemen's Union is a group of male and female volunteers who undergo military training on weekends. Many of them say February the 24th, 2022, was a turning point for them. Aista Linuskaita is one of those volunteers.
That day, like, there was many discussions with friends, with family. What would you do if something like that happened in your country? Because that is very realistic. And I felt like the answers of running away or hiding wasn't for me.
Lithuania, with fewer than 2 million people and armed forces of just over 20,000 troops, is worried about Russia's refusal to back down, despite the weaker-than-expected performance of its forces in Ukraine. Lithuania's border with Belarus, a Russian ally, is also cause for concern, for which this small Baltic country strives to be prepared. For Ricardo Marquina in Vilnius, John Speer, VOA News.
Pakistan has placed its security forces on the alert after a suicide bomber rammed a motorcycle into a police truck in the capital of Balochistan province, killing more than 10 officers. The Islamic State claimed responsibility for the attack. In January, at least 100 policemen were killed after a mosque was bombed in the city of Peshawar. The government says it is investigating the latest attack on security personnel and taking steps to prevent further attacks. For more, I spoke with VOA's Ayaz Gal.
That is a serious thing to have happened in Balochistan, because until now we have seen the Pakistani Taliban and the Baloch insurgents operating in Balochistan province have been targeting security forces and police personnel. But now Islamic State's local chapter joining these militant groups in such attacks is a serious development for the Pakistani security forces in this province, which is sparsely populated and the largest Pakistani province. Interestingly, all these militant groups are now specifically targeting Pakistani security forces, be it policemen or paramilitary or military forces. That is leading to a situation where Pakistan really needs to rethink its counter-terrorism strategy, because we have seen repeated attacks over the last 6-7 months targeting policemen, killing hundreds of them, injuring many more. Still, they have not been able to really seriously investigate these incidents and find out exactly how these groups have been able to operate so freely and go after these high-profile targets.
What is, at this moment, the security situation in this area that was hit, in the capital, and also in other areas that experts say are prone to terrorist attacks?
It's a huge province. You're like, it's 45% of the territory of Pakistan. So manning this area has been a challenge. The overall security situation in this particular area was not that bad, you know, for a long time. So that's why this was quite a shocking attack. But in Balochistan, generally, there have been almost daily attacks against security forces. So this province has been in the grip of a low-level insurgency by Baloch insurgents. Now TTP, the Pakistani Taliban, are raising attacks, launching attacks.
And as VOA's Ayaz Gal speaking with me from Islamabad, Vice President Kamala Harris says the United States is working to mitigate the impact of climate change because competition for diminishing resources can lead to instability. She spoke about drought and climate change in the western U.S. state of Colorado. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
The vice president came to Colorado at a time of deepening concern over water and the inability of regional states to agree to reduce demands on the Colorado River, where hydroelectric production downstream is threatened by prolonged drought. Vice President Harris told a community event in a Denver suburb that past federal policy did not sufficiently address conditions in western states.
Federal policy around extreme weather and extreme climate had taken into account historically tornadoes and hurricanes, but hey, let's also think about how we're dealing with drought and wildfires, and bringing to bear a perspective from Western states around how it impacts this region of the country a bit differently from other regions of the country.
She credited the impact of local action by state governors, including Colorado's Jared Polis.
We like to think we're doing a lot right here in Colorado. We're pursuing bold climate action to protect the state we love, to save people money. We know that right here in Colorado, extreme drought threatens our agriculture, our recreation industry, the situation around water in the West becoming more and more difficult.
Vice President Harris also said she's traveling to Africa later this month to focus on climate resilience and adaptation.
If a community or a particular geographic location is experiencing extreme drought over years and years, they cannot grow food. They will then leave that place to go somewhere where they can grow food. And they may go to a place that speaks a different language and prays to a different god, which invariably will lead to some degree of conflict.
Fighting climate change has been a top priority for the administration, with legislation last year that expands wind and solar power, with the goal of reducing U.S. dependence on oil, coal, and natural gas. Scott Stearns, VOA News, Arvada, Colorado.
Conservationists welcomed an agreement over the weekend on a long-touted global treaty to protect the ocean and promote the sustainable use of resources such as its oil, fish, and other sea life. Participants in negotiations say this will positively affect struggling fishers in Africa and the global south. Henry Wickens reports from Port Sudan.
Tears of joy at the United Nations in New York on Saturday as delegates agreed on an international treaty to make the exploitation of resources on the high seas sustainable. After what one scientist reportedly called the most important international negotiations that no one has ever heard of. What happened at the UN is likely to have far-reaching impacts across the globe, experts say. Not least for fishers in Africa like Abdullah Hussein Mohammed, who lives on Sudan's coast in Port Sudan. Abdullah also helps run the local fish market. On any given morning, he can be found scaling and filleting fish in the crowded, bustling bazaar. He says fish stocks across Africa have been diminishing for decades now, a fact supported by UN data. He and the entire community are suffering from the fallout. The amount of fish used to be much larger, he says. The sea was full of different species, but in recent years they have decreased. He and his fellow fishers have to travel longer and longer distances in search of fish. The new treaty focuses on the high seas, any part of the ocean at least 200 miles from shore, which is usually inaccessible to Africa's artisanal fishers. Experts say that the prevention of the ecosystem in the high seas means more fish, and that some of the species Mohammed says have all but disappeared will also be found closer to land where he works. Nicola Clark is with the Pew Charitable Trusts, an organisation that played a major part in the negotiations.
One of the cool things about this high seas treaty is even those these marine protected areas would be established in international waters, coastal waters and coastal nations can expect to see benefits.
African fishing communities play a crucial role in the continent's food security and economy. According to the World Bank, fisheries contribute $24 billion to the African economy. Michael Imran Kanu led the African delegation at the negotiations. He says aside from rising fish stock, there are other benefits for Africa, as a big part of the agreement was focused on sharing benefits equally among countries signing the treaty.
Actions taken to address the adverse impacts of climate change. Transfer of technology hopefully will take place in a meaningful way. Capacity development to ensure that our scientists are able to also participate.
However, the Pew Charitable Trust said the new treaty is not a fix-all for overexploited fisheries. The new agreement will have to work with those examining bodies to ensure their activities do not undermine the conservation effectiveness. Pew Project Director Liz Caran told VOA, for Mohammed's community and those like it throughout Africa, the promised benefits cannot come soon enough. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Port Sudan, Sudan.
In other news, at least 15 people were killed and several others injured in an explosion in a crowded market area in Bangladesh capital Dhaka on Tuesday, a local fire service official said. Fire service official Dinoni Sharma added that the blast occurred inside a seven-story building, causing heavy damage to two floors. The cause of the blast was not clear, he said, adding that the dead toll could rise as rescuers' operations are ongoing. On Sunday, three were killed in a suspected gas explosion in Dhaka. On Saturday, seven people were killed and several injured when a fire broke out following an explosion at an oxygen plant in southeastern Bangladesh. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afua in Washington. The United Nations Refugee Agency is calling for urgent support to help tens of thousands of Malis who fled fighting in a disputed border town in Somalia's breakaway region of Somaliland. Maya Masekeo reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The refugee agency is seeking urgent support for an estimated 100,000 Somalis who have fled to Ethiopia's Somali region. The Somalis were displaced by fighting in the town of Las Anod, the center of a conflict between the breakaway Somaliland region and locals who want to be governed by Somalia. The support is necessary to reduce the risk of conflict between host communities in Ethiopia's drought-affected Somali region, said Mamadou Dianbalde, the agency's representative in Ethiopia.
If we do not support the populations who are hosting and who are doing their part, we can do as much as possible, but, we cannot reduce that risk.
The communities affected by drought in Ethiopia were the first responders in welcoming the refugees, says Tesfahun Gobeze, Director General of Refugees and Returnees Service in Ethiopia. He says they are getting help from the UN World Food Programme.
So far we have been able to communicate with WFP, and they have generously agreed to the idea that they will consider all host communities that are affected by the drought to be included in the food distribution that would be happening to the refugees.
The UNHCR is also appealing for solutions to the problem in Las Anod so that people can return home. Somaliland Foreign Minister Essa Kaid says his government is open to dialogue, but not on the territorial integrity of Somaliland.
We want to give chance to talks. We want peace and stability to take place. We want to be inclusive and have Las Anod and Sol and Senegal regions in Somaliland as they were before. Members of the clan who lives there are in the Somaliland government.
Garad Mukhtar Garad Ali, one of the traditional leaders in the Sol region, says the most important prerequisite to dialogue is a ceasefire, and that this is yet to be achieved.
Each time Somaliland administration mentions the word ceasefire, it might mean something to the international community, but it has a different meaning to us, which is the preparation of a new attack to the city. So long Somaliland troops are present in and out or in and around the city and can fire at us easily, it won't be possible to have a ceasefire successfully.
The first asylum seekers arrived in Ethiopia on February 6. And while estimates by local authorities in Ethiopia put the figure at nearly 100,000, this number has yet to be substantiated. Maya Misaker for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and a panel of Washington journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including China warns the U.S. it should change its, quote, distorted, unquote, attitude towards them while defending its stance on the war in Ukraine and China's close ties to Russia. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Season 3 of the Basketball Africa League is here. Starting off in Dakar from March 11th to March 21st for the Sahara Conference, then heading to Cairo from April 26th to May 6th for the Nile Conference, and the excitement continues to build in the finals in Kigali from May 21st to May 27th. Tune in and follow the BAL starting this Saturday on The Voice of America.
Around the clock, The Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Protests have been growing inside and outside Iran, initially sparked by the death in police custody of Mahsa Amini, a young woman arrested by Iran's morality police for not having her hair fully covered. Each Wednesday, go beyond the breaking news with VOA's Flashpoint Iran. Listen online at voanews.com or in your podcast player.
Tuned every Wednesday and Friday at 9 p.m. UTC time with your pilot, Roger Moon, to listen to the RM Show, where you can respond to our question of the week get some entertainment news, and enjoy some great music. It's all happening at VOA Africa. God bless. Peace, Africa.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and issues in the news on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Gene Rolfo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The scale, scope, and brutality of Russia's efforts to subjugate Ukraine and its people continue to appall the world, declared State Department spokesperson Ned Price. There is no clearer example of that brutality than what the Kremlin is doing to Ukraine's children. A newly released independent report by Yale University's Humanitarian Research Lab, funded by the State Department-supported Conflict Observatory Program, details Russia's systematic government-wide efforts to indefinitely relocate thousands of Ukraine's children away from their families or guardians to areas of Ukraine under Russian government control, and to Russia itself via a network of 43 camps and other facilities. About 75% of the camps appear to be indoctrination centers, exposing Ukraine's children to Russia-centric academic, cultural, patriotic, and/or military education, with the apparent goal of integrating children from Ukraine into the Russian government's vision of national culture, history, and society, the report states. In many cases, Russia purported to temporarily evacuate children in Ukraine under the guise of a free summer camp, only to later refuse to return the children and to cut off all contact with their families, noted spokesperson Price.
Such actions obviously will have serious long-term implications on these children's development. The network of facilities which these children are sent is vast, spanning from Russia-occupied Crimea, across Russia itself, from the Black Sea region to its Far East. The report indicates how these abusive practices involve officials and other individuals at all levels of Russia's government.
As President Biden recently stated, Russia has stolen Ukrainian children in an attempt to steal Ukraine's future.
Russia's system of forced relocation, re-education, and adoption of Ukraine's children is a key element of the Kremlin's systematic efforts to deny and suppress Ukraine's identity, its history, and its culture. The devastating impacts of Russia's failing war of aggression will be felt for generations to come.
The Yale University report and others like it reinforce U.S. and international resolve to pursue accountability for war crimes and other atrocities committed by members of Russia's forces in Ukraine. The United States and the international community will continue to support Ukraine and its people as they seek justice for these heinous acts for as long as it takes.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.